6. He could and did, walking the two-block length of Upper Garrison Lane twice before he realized that the modest two-story house, tucked into the elbow of an uphill curve in the street and half hidden behind lush shrubbery and a low stone wall, was what he was looking for. No sign out front, no parking area, not a police car in sight. But behind a rolling bank of pink and white narcissus, slightly below the level of the street and overhung by a shabby, glassed-in balcony, he finally spotted a nondescript storefront window that might have been the entrance to a dry cleaner's or a hearing aid center. But a closer look showed police in stick-on letters on the window and an inconspicuous gray plaque on the stuccoed wall beside it. Devon and Cornwall Constabulary, Isles of Scilly Police Station. The station is open between 0900 hours and 1000 hours daily where possible. He smiled. It must be nice to live someplace where reports of criminality could be dealt with in an hour a day, where possible. Once he opened the door and walked in, however, except for the absence of a reception area, he found himself in a small-town version of any big city police station he'd ever been in. A short corridor lined with a couple of glassed-in cubicles, mismatched office furniture, two bright neon ceiling lights, desks cluttered with papers and files, and walls cluttered with plastic-sheeted grease-pencil calendars and charts, scrawled notes and public information posters, including an unlikely one advertising substantial rewards for information leading to the prosecution of terrorists. On a bureau near the door were two old-fashioned bucket helmets and two of the newer checkered police hats that always made Gideon think of taxi drivers. The cubicle to the left, despite its desk and chair, seemed to be a storage space, copy center, and coffee room. In the one on the right, a smiling, clean-cut, red-haired young man in dark blue uniform trousers and a short-sleeved, open-throated white shirt with blue epaulets, sat working at a computer, apparently untroubled by an in-basket that was spilling over with forms and memos. "I'm Police Constable Rob," he said cheerfully, swiveling his chair to face the newcomer. "How may I be of service?"
"My name's Gideon Oliver, Constable. I'm an anthropologist. I was just looking over some bones at the museum, and one of them in particular caught my attention. A tourist brought it into the museum in January. It was buried on the beach near Halange Point. Her dog dug it up."
"And we're speaking of a human bone here, sir." Polite attention, but no real interest. As Madeline had said, the odd human bone turning up now and then wasn't that unusual.
"Definitely, yes, but the main thing is that I think there's a good chance that it came from someone who's been dismembered. My guess is that it's something that happened within the last 10 years, probably in the last 5, so I thought I'd better bring it in. I'm supposed to ask for Sergeant Clapper."
A stray bone might be nothing to get excited about, but violent crimes, let alone dismemberments, were not common fare on St. Mary's. Rob's mouth hung open for a moment before he replied,
"I think Sergeant Clapper is very much the man for that, sir."
He picked up his telephone and explained.
"Shall I send him in, sir?"
Gideon heard the rumbled answer come through the door at the end of the corridor, delivered with a "won't they ever leave me in peace" sigh.
"No, I'll come there."
Sergeant Clapper was a broad, heavy man of 55 or so in civilian clothes, black corduroy trousers and a white shirt folded back over thick, hairy wrists, with a sad, dull brown slick of hair pulled across his scalp, a heavy red drinker's face, and tired, seen everything, don't even think of putting anything over on me eyes. He stuck out a blunt-fingered, big-knuckled hand that looked as hard as a shovel, but turned out to be about as emphatic as something dragged out of a pond in late August.
"I'm Sergeant Clapper."
"Gideon Oliver."
"What's all this about a dismemberment?"
"Well, I have it here." He looked for someplace on Rob's desk on which to put it, and with a sweep of both hands, Rob cleared a space. File folders and their contents flopped to the floor.
"Kyle, your desk is a damn disgrace,"
Clapper muttered. Rob seemed undisturbed.
"Sorry, Sarge."
Gideon opened the bag and put the tibial fragment on the old-fashioned blotter that was now visible on the desktop. When, he wondered, had he last seen a desk blotter, let alone one that was actually stained with ink? The three men stood looking down at the bone. Rob seemed eager to comment, but waited for his chief.
"That's it," Clapper said. "That's your dismemberment."
He made a small dismissive gesture with his hand. Gideon noticed that the fingernails were chewed to scraps, and the thick fingers were deeply tobacco-stained, down almost to the first joint.
"Well, it's an indication, a possible indication of a dismemberment."
"Ah, so it's a possible indication, is it?"
Gideon was beginning to get irritated.
"Sergeant, American, are you?"
"That's right, I'm here just for the week, for the consortium at Star Castle."
"Oh, yes, one of the participants."
"Well, no, my wife is a fellow. I'm just here to... I'm just along." Clapper's lips parted to show a set of big brown teeth.
"Are you now? Well, well."
Now Gideon was irritated. What the hell was that supposed to mean?
"I'm also a professional anthropologist," he said hotly. "I do quite a lot of forensic work. I assure you, I know what I'm talking about."
"No offense, Mr. Oliver."
"Dr. Oliver," Gideon said, "or professor if you prefer."
Now he was not only annoyed with Clapper, but with himself for letting the guy get under his skin, and ashamed of himself as well for acting like a stuffed shirt. This was not going as planned. He summoned up what he hoped was a convincingly friendly smile.
"Well, let me show you what I have," he said mildly, "and you can take it from there."
"Chairs, Kyle,"
Clapper ordered from the side of his mouth. Rob was obviously used to being treated like this. Docilely, he cleared off a couple of fabric-seated metal chairs and set them in front of the desk. When the three men sat, Clapper put an ankle-booted foot against the desk front and shoved himself back a few feet. He was putting some space between himself and them to show that he wasn't committing himself to anything yet. This was between his constable and his visitor. He was merely observing.
"So be it."
Gideon addressed himself directly to Rob while Clapper, looking preoccupied, thumbed open the lid of a red and white pack of Gold Bond cigarettes and lit up.
"What this is," Gideon began.
The telephone on Rob's desk chirped. He picked it up, listened, and covered the mouthpiece.
"It's for you, Sarge. Exeter. Policy and Performance Unit, Chief Inspector Corey. What should I tell him?"
"Tell him to saw it off, the vile bugger,"
Clapper growled.
"Sarge, this is the third time in the last two—"
"Tell him to saw it off."
Rob removed his hand from the mouthpiece.
"Chief Inspector, Sergeant Clapper is in a conference with village officials at the moment. May I have him call you back?" "Yes, I know he did. No, I'll see he does this time." "Yes, of course he will. Thank you, Chief Inspector."
"You were saying," Clapper said to Gideon.
"I was saying that what this is a left tibia. The tibia is the—"
"Shin bone,"
Rob said with an eager smile. If he'd been American, Gideon thought, and this had been the 1940s, he might have made a Hollywood living portraying nice, young, small-town soda jerks. He reminded Gideon of all those bright-eyed, painfully alert young students trying to make a good impression on the first day of class. And as he generally liked them, he'd taken liking to the young cop.
"Right, and what we have is the proximal three-quarters or so, that is the—"
"The end closer to the center of the body. In the case of the tibia, that would be the upper part near the knee," he pointed. "The patella would be attached right here, then."
"Kyle," Clapper wearily exhaled a lungful of blue smoke, "we know you're a clever lad who's been to university and you're very intelligent. Now why don't you just let the man tell his story without interrupting after every two words?"
Rob's face stiffened with its first dull show of resentment, quickly snuffed out.
"Sorry about that, sir."
"It's not as if I don't know what a shin bone is now, is it?"
"No, sir, I didn't mean to imply—"
Clapper turned away from him toward Gideon.
"Do you suppose we can get on with it, Dr. Oliver?"
Ah, that was what Clapper's problem was. An aging old guard policeman, ill-educated and burnt out, who'd never risen beyond the rank of constable sergeant, stuck away in a tiny, crimeless village, in the remotest place in all of merry old England, to run out his time until retirement, and burdened with a young, personable, college-educated youth who was clearly on his way up the ladder on which Clapper had climbed but a couple of dingy rungs at the bottom. Gideon felt his first flicker of sympathy for the older man, but not as much as he felt for Rob. "That's right, Constable. The patella would be about there, but it doesn't really attach to the tibia itself or to any bone. It's embedded in the terminal tendon of the quadriceps femoris, the big muscle in the front of the thigh, and actually sits in a little hollow at the distal end of the femur, just above the tibia." This was said equally to gratify Rob and to irritate Clapper, and judging by their reactions, he'd succeeded. Rob looked at him gratefully, while Clapper heaved a huge sigh and looked at his watch. "Better get on with it, all right," Gideon thought, "before I lose him altogether. This is the right tibia of an adult male who died sometime in the last 10 years. He paused, expecting a challenge from Clapper. "How do you know it's a male? How do you know he's an adult? How do you know when he died?" But the sergeant merely blew smoke at the ceiling and continued to look fidgety and preoccupied. "The markings on it indicate a dismemberment, which in turn strongly suggests a homicide, at least to me." He waited again for Clapper to object, and this time he did. "A homicide, is it now?" the sergeant said with elephantine joviality. "Kyle, lad, when was the last homicide we had here in these delightful islands?"
"Don't know, sir. Before my time, that's for sure."
"You see, Professor," Clapper said, "we don't much go in for that sort of thing in this little corner of the world. Our usual run of problems, on those rare occasions when we have them, involves disorderly conduct, antisocial behavior, noise complaints, alcohol-related things generally speaking. Although, if I'm going to be honest, I have to admit there was the case of the purloined piglet from Farmer Follett's van on market day last. We don't much go in for murder and dismemberment in my little corner of the world either," Gideon said curtly. "But that doesn't mean they don't happen." Without waiting for Clapper to reply, he picked up where he'd left off. "The cut that severed the bone was made by a saw. So was this groove right next to the cut. It's a hesitation cut, the kind of thing you get when you're having a little trouble placing the saw at first. But these grooves here," he pointed to two shallow cut marks at a slight angle to the hesitation cut, "were made with a knife." "A knife and a saw?" Clapper said with a skeptical lift of his eyebrows. "Yes, and that's what makes me think this guy was almost certainly dismembered. An old bone with saw marks on it, or some knife scratchings, who knows. That might be nothing more than something that was found and then whittled or sawed for, well, for some innocent reason, not that anything comes to mind. But a knife and a saw, that's different." Rob shook his head, puzzled. "But why?" "You'd want a knife to cut down through the soft tissue, then a saw to get through the bone."
"Ah,"
an engrossed Rob said. But Clapper looked as restless and dubious as ever. Gideon plowed ahead anyway. "You can see the difference between the two kinds of cuts by..."
"The knife marks are narrower than the saw marks?"
Rob asked with a wary glance at Clapper, who continued to say nothing.
"Is that the difference?"
"More or less. The teeth on a saw are set, that is, they're at a slight outward angle to the blade on each side. So the groove that a saw leaves is going to be very slightly wider than the actual blade. On the other hand, a knife has no set, so its groove is going to be a better indication of its actual width. More than that, a knife blade is V-shaped in cross-section, so it leaves a V-shaped groove, whereas a saw
leaves a square, flat-bottomed one."
Rob finished for him, peering at the various notches and nodding vigorously. "Well, U-shaped would probably be more accurate if you look closely."
"Yes, I see."
"Besides that, a V-shaped groove in fresh bone is more likely to close up a little afterward,
whereas a wider U-shaped one won't. Which means that not only do saw cuts give an over-impression of blade width, but knife cuts tend to give a slight under-impression.
What about a serrated knife?
Clapper put in. That has teeth. Not set at an angle to the blade, Gideon said. It leaves a slightly different mark than a non-serrated one, but it's still V-shaped.
And why, if you don't mind my asking, are you so sure the big cut, the one that cut it in two, is from a saw?
Clapper asked in the spirit of a defense attorney who found himself short of serious ammunition, but had every intention of obstructing anyway.
Why not an axe? That'd be my choice. Speed things up a bit, wouldn't it?
No, this is a clean cut. There would have been some crushing, some splintering with an axe, and probably more than one blow to get through the bone. And only a saw would have left these parallel striations in the cut end. They show the direction of the saw cut, by the way, which was from back to front, and... Clapper's sigh was monumental. He got up to grind out his cigarette in the metal ashtray on Rob's desk, then went to the window behind the desk and looked out at the garage of the house next door, a bored and restless man.
And there's another way you can tell, too, Gideon went on,
partly for Rob's continuing edification, but mostly for the hell of it. He took the bone back from the young constable, who had been holding it while he followed Gideon's remarks, and touched his finger to a thin, quarter-inch spike extending from the cut end.
This is the breakaway spur that you get with saw cuts. The bone snaps off from its own weight just before the saw blade gets all the way through.
Yes, the same thing happens when one saws a piece of wood, doesn't it? Rob said. Unless, of course, one turns it over and finishes sawing through from the other side.
Right, but when you're dismembering a corpse, as the sergeant correctly suggested, you're probably going to be a lot more interested in speed than in neatness.
Clapper turned from the window and perched his bulk somewhat precariously on the sill.
Where did you say this was found? On the beach? Up near Halangi Point? Yes, a little north of the Creeb, Gideon said, to show him he was dealing with someone who knew the lay of the land, not merely some know-nothing outlander.
What the hell is a Creeb? He wondered.
Buried, Clapper said, a statement, not a question.
Yes.
Clapper lit up another gold bond. Buried, as in the active voice or in the passive?
Pardon me.
Are you saying someone buried the bone in the sand, or simply the bone was buried in the sand, as, for example, if it had washed ashore from who knows what distant land and then been covered over during a storm?
Gideon revised his estimate of Clapper's educational level.
I don't have any way of knowing.
Ah. When the telephone trilled again, Rob listened a moment and reported.
It's for you again, Sarge.
He made a sympathetic face.
Exeter again.
His voice went to a respectful whisper.
It's Chief Superintendent Dibbs himself this time.
Clapper rolled his eyes.
And does Chief Superintendent Dibbs himself strike you as being in a fun-loving frame of mind?
Not really, sir.
The sergeant rose heavily from the windowsill and clumped back toward his office, muttering. He was a slow-moving man with a stately, surging stride, like an astronaut moving through a zero-gravity environment.
Exeter is where headquarters is, Dr. Oliver, the Devon and Cornwall Constabulary main office,
Rob explained when the door had closed behind the sergeant.
They've been giving Sergeant Clapper a bit of a difficult time.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I suspect he'll be in there a while.
Shall I leave the bone with you, then?
I think that would be best. Can we reach you at the castle if need be?
Any time. I'll be here till the end of the week.
The two men stood and shook hands.
Thank you very much for taking the time and trouble to come in, sir. We appreciate it, he grinned. And thanks for the osteology lesson. We'll be in touch now, sir.
Heading back down Upper Garrison, a grumpy Gideon doubted it. He knew Clapper's type all too well. A cynical, disillusioned cop nearing 60, who disguised his cynicism with a leaden-foot jocularity, who was more interested in keeping a low profile and not making any waves than he was in solving old anonymous murders.
He wasn't going to take the chance of stepping into anything that might seriously complicate his life. The easiest, least risky path for him at this point would be to simply let the matter slide, to not even open a case file. It was only a single bone, after all. And that was the path he was going to take.